Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
We approach every day with a standard that we don't, you know, diminish for anybody. And we work really hard with recruiting to make sure we're bringing the right people in first. And obviously we want them to be great basketball players, but we'll sacrifice the basketball side if it's not a person that, you know, is willing to come in and be selfless and just, you know, work their butt off to contribute to where the program is now. So I think that's kind of the biggest thing, is just still keeping the process the main thing. And not, you know, jumping into conversations about, you know, any type of predestined, you know, third championship or anything like that.
We are here. Another episode of Not Even D2. I'm your host, KJ Allison, here with my co-host, Naruta Perdomo. Definitely got a lit episode today where we talk with NYU women's basketball head coach Meg Barber. I mean, 69-game win streak for them. Back-to-back national championships, obviously undefeated seasons throughout the 69 games. But this was a great episode, which we'll get into. But I feel like we got to cover some things before we get into that. We actually met up in New York City. We went to one of their games, the NYU games. It was a good vibe. And then obviously Thanksgiving break, you could talk about that. And then I pulled up on you in Utica, gave Ruta some work in ping pong. Know what I do on that field, but talk to me, bro. How's your break?
Nah, man, it's been a really good last couple weeks, bro. I'm hitting a nice flow just with school, pod, life stuff, getting a nice routine going. But yeah, Thanksgiving break was great, man. It was great to spend time with my parents. I haven't seen my mom in a long time before this past Thanksgiving break, so got to spend a lot of time with her. Ate good. And it was productive, too. I have finals week next week, so, you know, I had to just lock in and make sure I get all my work done. And finals week is looking pretty good for me right now. I'm doing well. And then, obviously, I saw you on Sunday, which was dope. I don't think I lost a game in ping pong, which you always love to see. But, yeah, it's been a great last couple weeks, bro. How about you?
I've been good. Shorty came up to Aub, spent Thanksgiving with my fam, so that was good vibes. I did some bot shit, bro. Fordham was playing against UAlbany, and I seen on the ESPN app, so I was like I texted DeJore. I'm like, yo, patch me on with some tickets, bro. And he was like, bet, I got you. So send me the tickets. I accept them the day of the game, and it was like close tickets, like right behind the bench. I'm like, oh, he hooked us up. So we get ready for the game, me and Shawty about to leave. I check. I'm like, where is the game even at? I'm thinking it's at UAlb. I start driving. Bro, it's in Canada, bro. It was like one of the holiday tournaments. I didn't even peep as a kid. I was tight. Shawty was like, so you made me get ready all this time and the game, we're not even about to go. I was like, my fault. But I'm definitely got to catch DeJore when he's games. He's been hooping. But yeah, break was good. Finals week at NYU is no joke, but I'm locked in, like you said, pod, flow state, we about to get hot. But yeah, let's get into this episode with Coach Barber. I feel like you don't really hear NYU's story or her story, Like, she's one of the best coaches in the country. NYU's rolling right now. And I know, like, 69 games, it just sounds crazy saying it out loud. I feel like when I was a player, maybe once in my career, we went on a double-digit win streak, or maybe twice, but still, like, 69 games is crazy. And UConn went on, like, their crazy streak. And I wanted to say, like, NYU's streak is probably more dominant, even though UConn 111, but 69, and I'm going to bring up some stats about their seasons. Like, last year, when they won the Natty, they won by 28 points. Like, that's something you don't hear all the time. And throughout that year, like, no competitive games. I think their closest game was, like, 10 or 19, or 10 through 20, in that range. So they're just blowing teams out. And then this year, it's insane. I think their scoring margin is, like, 65 points right now. Bro, I'm gonna read some of their scores just so people know. And some of these schools are, like, their conference champions. So Swarthmore, they beat 108-49. And no disrespect to these teams, I'm just showing the dominance of NYU. Regis College, 114-35. New Jersey City, 112-40. New Paltz, 99-37. John Jay, 114-34. Kobe Sawyer, 115-42. And they just beat United States Merchant Marine, 102-70. So it's just like, yo, they're walking teams down and just violating. And it's crazy because, like, I said to you, I you can't even tell if Coach Barber's really a good coach because they're just blowing teams out. You can't see a good ATO. So, I mean, you can, but it doesn't mean nothing because they're already up so much. But it's just crazy. They're dominant so far. You could take it from there.
Yeah, I like your point just saying how, like, I feel like in general people kind of ignore, like, NYU athletics sometimes. Like, it's just like they're – like, yes, they are the national championship, so it's hard to say ignored. But, like, the story of what you're talking about, like, Coach Barber, you know what I'm saying? Like, she is a legendary coach at this point, so she should be held in the high regard. And I'm sure she does, but it's like that notoriety that you're talking about she may not have right now. And that's okay. Those who know, you know what I'm saying? You watch NYU game, she's that, bro. Like, she was, you know, they were smacking New Paltz, and she's still coaching her players hard. You know what I'm saying? Maybe the players that don't really play that much, she's still on them. But I love Coach Barber, like, for real. Like, I love how she coaches. I love her personality. She's a Utica. There's a Utica connection between her and I. So just for that, too, she has a lifelong supporter and fan, honestly, for me. But great episode for sure with her, bro.
Yeah, it's definitely special. I mean, like, I took you for a little tour around the Paulson Center, and it's actually crazy. Like, you feel, just being a student here, you feel different, bro. Like, NYU is a legendary brand, nationally known, internationally known brand. And then, like, the basketball side of it, she's growing that to an elite level. Like you said, but, like, people aren't really talking about NYU athletics, but I can't see them losing a game. And D3 Hoops right now in women's basketball is super lit. Like, John Jay is good. Scranton just beat Pitt.
Smith is tough.
Yeah, like, and they beat Smith back-to-back years in the Natty. Yeah. So D3 is growing, but she's bringing this brand to a different level. And, like, the support throughout NYU, whether it's administration, the community, fans, all that, like, they really have a connected group at this point. It started from Coach Barber just building that thing from the ground up. And she went to NYU as well, so it's more personal for her, which you always like to see. But it was a great episode. We get into all of her career, Team USA this past offseason. It's just a really good episode.
We didn't even talk about that. Like, she was a coach for Team USA.
That just shows how crazy her resume is. But, yeah, it was a great episode. Make sure you follow, subscribe, go catch all of our content on socials, and let's get into the conversation with Coach Barber.
All right, we are here, another episode of Not Even D2. We are here today. How are you feeling today, Coach?
I'm good. Glad to be here.
Yeah, appreciate you joining. Definitely excited for this talk. I want to start. We all got a little bit of connection together. Our connection together, not only are we, well, I'm attending NYU, you're the head coach, but You're from upstate New York. I'm from upstate New York. A little bit of different area. Hoosick Falls versus Troy is a little different. But I'm curious, do you go back at all to Hoosick Falls? You catch the Scaghtikoke Fair, any of that? Talk to me.
I wish. I miss the Scaghtikoke Fair. So my sister lives in Balsam Spa now with her family. So that's been a nice respite from the city. And we bounce up there quite a bit, you know, holidays and such. So it's a little more big city life than Hoosick Falls, but I still get up that way for sure.
So as I understand, you went from Hoosick Falls to an undergraduate student to NYU. That must have been a crazy transition. Can you just talk about that real quick as a young person dealing with the crazy life that is, you know, New York City living?
Yeah, I mean, I tell a lot of people I don't think I would have done it if not for the team. Just, you know, from where I was from and kind of looking at schools, and I knew I wanted a high academic experience. I was a really competitive person, still am. So wanted to look into programs that would be really competitive as well. And I found the perfect match here, and I wasn't quite sure about the city. And then I visited, and I tell recruits still, like, you know, where we are in New York City and Greenwich Village, it's kind of more jazz versus, like, you know, Times Square being like the hip hop rock and roll center of New York City with the vibes. So it's actually pretty chill. And, you know, but the team being here and just, you know, having someone to go to lunch with the first day of school and things like that really make a world of difference for your transition. And, you know, I've never looked back negatively. It's been, it was the experience of a lifetime.
Yeah. You say it's chill, but like as an 18-year-old and,
yeah,
for example, I came from Alpha University and there's like one stoplight, and Hoosick Falls is probably similar. And then you just see like tons of people every day, even if it's not like super like busy. It does have the chill environment, but just all those people, all those big buildings, that could be a culture shock in itself.
Yeah. I mean, listen, my roommates, my suite mates were people from around the world. So just like, you know, day one, you know, living and experiencing the transition of joining college with people from all over the world is probably more of a beneficial experience than even what you're learning in the classroom, I think. So I just really, you know, grew so much as a person and, you know, really dove into all the different opportunities that NYU provided. But it's definitely not for everybody. You know, you have to, I think, have a maturity to be able to handle, like you said, there's just so much going on in the city, and you need to be able to manage your time and, you know, have your priorities and just make sure you're getting done the things that you came to college for.
100%. I want to talk about one thing before we get into NYU, just here. Well, I guess it's about NYU, but the Paulson Center, we'll spin back on like the athletics as a whole, but just talk about like their initiative that you've seen to build the athletic department, because obviously, like we were talking off air about the Paulson Center, $2.3 billion or whatever number to create it. And we were just saying how much of a luxury or how beautiful it is. So just talk about like the athletic department, the initiative you seem to continue building the athletic platform.
Yeah, I mean, it's been transformational. And I think that, you know, people talk about Division III and try to categorize, you know, what our athletic programs are. And, you know, when I look at NYU, NYU just does things a certain way. And they don't look at division. They don't look at what a ranking is. They want to be the best in whatever it is they're doing. And so this facility matches that. You know, there was not a cost spared with, you know, what they tried to invest in this. And it's an experience for all students. It's not just varsity athletics. You know, we have amazing pickup games going on the weekends here. And, you know, so I think it really serves the entire community, which is really fun. And, you know, the game environments, our video boards, what's going on game days here. We have food trucks parked outside and, you know, brands coming in to give away all sorts of free stuff at games. So, you know, all of that kind of goes to what we're doing, which is trying to share this experience with the NYU community and not just have it be a siloed women's basketball experience.
Yeah, that's special what you just hit on, building it like as a community base, because I feel like I came on a visit here last year for basketball, and they were saying that most students don't even know that NYU has sports teams. And then now you're building that connectivity together. I saw you guys just did like the meet the basketball teams with the men's and women's team, and it looked like a fun event. And those are the events that like Division I teams do. So what you're saying, like, they don't look at division, it's just all like one basically.
Yeah, that was kind of like our form of like Midnight Madness. And I think what's kind of neat here, especially if you're into marketing, is you really have to think of doing things a little bit differently and servicing, you know, the community that you have. And, you know, Friday and Saturday nights in New York, think of what there is to do. So, you know, sometimes we're manipulating things to try and, you know, make it a fan friendly thing before they might be heading out to do something else in the city, because there's just so many things going on here. And, you know, obviously the pro scene here as well, with the Knicks and the Nets and the Liberty, and, you know, there's so much good basketball going on, and you could have, you know, St. John's playing at the Garden. And so there's just a lot that I think, you know, goes into how we can share this. But the biggest thing, like you mentioned, is people knowing that we exist to begin with. And a lot of that has come from the Paulson Center finally being, you know, ready to use. And we've only been here now for 2 years in this, you know, and it was probably a 6 or 7 year gap with having a home facility in between. So a lot of that just generating interest and things like that is kind of new and starting from the ground up, but they're doing a really, really great job.
Yeah. I want to dive into basketball talk. So I was doing some research, and I'll put out some stats right now. So you guys, back-to-back years of 31-0. Your last UAA loss was in 2023, January 15, 2023. You're preseason ranked number one going into this year, and you have the opportunity to do something special, because there's only been three teams that have won back-to-backs: Capital in 94 and 95, Amherst in 17 and 18, and then Walsh U won three in a row. So you would be tied with them if you guys get this third one. So obviously, like, there's a lot of dynasty talk going around, like social media spaces, I'm assuming probably in some of your conversations. Just talk about like what that means to you and how that kind of changes like your expectations, how the program moves forward, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was unfortunately here for the Wash U three in a row. I was playing here. So I'm very familiar. I think I've kind of been lucky in terms of my playing and coaching career to sort of sit on the other side of some just astounding greatness. And that includes when I was an assistant at Temple. UConn was in our conference, and they were just on, I think, like over 100 game in a row, you know, tear with Brianna Stewart and company. So, you know, just seeing that as a player and as a coach, I think has really helped, you know, my own vision for just approaching every day the same way and having a standard and like not really just giving in, you know, for any reason, whether it's, hey, we have a star player who doesn't want to work hard, or, you know, our staff is tired and we don't want to put that extra work in. Like, we approach every day with a standard that we don't, you know, diminish for anybody. And we work really hard with recruiting to make sure we're bringing the right people in first. And obviously we want them to be great basketball players, but we'll sacrifice the basketball side if it's not a person that, you know, is willing to come in and be selfless and just, you know, work their butt off to contribute to where the program is now. So I think that's kind of the biggest thing, is just still keeping the process the main thing and not, you know, jumping into conversations about, you know, any type of predestined, you know, third championship or anything like that, because it really, I mean, I was telling the team yesterday in practice, like, this, no one's here. We're out here grinding. Like, this is where, you know, success is built. It's not showing up on game day and, you know, crossing your fingers and hoping. I think last year we really entered every game with a confidence that we were really well prepared, and we had worked so hard that it just felt like we were kind of steamrolling and just focusing on ourselves. So, you know, I think the challenge for myself is just to, you know, remember that process. We've graduated a lot of players, so we're a little bit younger and we have a lot of talent, but just still keeping the process a process and not trying to jump to comparisons to last year's team or the 2024 team.
That's interesting, because I hear sometimes in interviews that you've done, like, you talked about your Temple experience, how, like, obviously UConn was a gauntlet and everyone else in the conference was trying to figure out, like, all right, how do we play for number two in the conference? And then, like you talked about, you were at Wash U and you were playing against them when they were going on their run. So you've seen, like you said, different approaches to winning, different, you know, cultures, different experiences, and they've all influenced you in their own way. And from the outside looking in, I know you talked on a little bit about approaching every day the same and with intent, but just talk more about what, like, how you guys produce excellence on the court. Because when you watch NYU women's basketball, it truly is like you guys are steamrolling teams, honestly, last 2 years, and you guys just ball, and I love watching it. So explain that a little bit.
I really appreciate that. You know, again, I think every coach will say recruiting is the lifeblood of your program. And I think one of the things that really has set us apart is, first, the institution I'm at, like, we can recruit anybody. You know, we have players with D1 offers. We have players from around the world. You know, I'm getting emails every day from, you know, people that want to be a part of this. And so we're able to really be really target the absolute best of the best and make sure that each class is, if we can, stronger than the class that came before it even. And like I said, that's not sacrificing the person, but like, if you come to our practices, I think that's really what sets us apart. We have an entire roster of really competitive basketball players. I think our second and third unit would be starters at a lot of other schools. And so just that grind of getting better every day and competing. I mean, you know, to echo Gino Auriemma, it's like, I don't coach effort, and I don't, you know, I'm not a screamer yeller in practice. What I try to do is create really competitive drills and competitive moments for our team to be able to express that competitiveness and kind of show what they'll do even in game moments, you know, because we've all heard of, like, they're a gamer. But for a coach, that's an unsettling feeling to just hope when you show up on game day that someone's going to act a different way because it's a game day. So I try to create that environment as much as I can in practice to get us used to, you know, you're exhausted and, like, we really have to perform on this next singular possession. And, you know, like last year, people said, well, you haven't really been tested. Are you nervous about that? You know, heading into the NCAA tournament, are you worried that you haven't had any close games? But every day in practice, I was running, you know, situations, and there's 2 minutes, we're down eight. And, you know, so I knew what we were capable of. Obviously, you know, sometimes it's helpful to have that on game day, but I just think practice is where success is bred. And I can't overemphasize that enough, just having the right people and being committed to your process and practice. Game day is like the cherry on top. You know, that's just like, that's a fun part. I love to stand over there. I told the team last year, I was more so a fan than their coach, because I was really proud of the effort they had put in. And I really felt like they deserved the platform that they were kind of standing on, you know, in the women's basketball world, and with the streak that was, people just kept, you know, coming around, New York media, different people. And I really wanted them to enjoy it because they really had earned that moment.
I mean, when you think about, like, the NYU women's basketball program, like, just by the fact that you guys haven't lost a game in 2 years, like, that's in a crazy category that many other college programs will probably never see, honestly, you know. And you guys are reaching those heights. And it's also interesting too, because you brought up the fact about how you guys are competing in practice. And I feel like competing will bring engagement, like, from the players, just in different conversations I've had with coaches, just having your guys or women play against, you know, instead of doing 5-on-0, playing against each other. Like, that's at the end of the day, iron sharpens iron, is going to help, you know, each other out the most.
For sure. In 2024, that was obviously our run to the first championship. And in the NCAA tournament, we were doing like a pretty soft, you know, like a light practice the day before. Just, we had gotten out to Pennsylvania. We were playing at DeSales. And one of our like backup post player who needed to have a big role that weekend went down with an injury that was like season ending, just in kind of almost like a walkthrough environment. And we had a player from our sort of like our scout team that just went right in. And I told everybody that wanted to listen, I think she really contributed in a big way to the entirety of that NCAA tournament run. And we ended up winning the national championship. And, you know, she's out there playing in the national championship game. So when people talk about, you know, the components of winning a championship or having, you know, an unbeaten streak, it obviously takes a lot of luck. But luck favors the prepared, I think. And so when we're developing players that other people in the stands might not even see on game day, you know, when something does happen that is unlucky, you know, the lucky part is that you can insert somebody who's prepared and they've put the work in and they're ready to step into that moment. And so I think that's part of, like, we don't have male practice players, you know, our players are playing against each other, getting better, you know, every day. And it really does. And it also brings them closer together. Like you said, you know, it develops a chemistry and a trust, like, hey, I'm going to push you and we're going to walk off the court and go have dinner together and go study together. And, you know, we're sisters in that respect. So.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you guys won back-to-back like championships, and I haven't really heard you talk about how you've been, or I'm curious to hear how you've been able to like turn it off a little bit, like sit back and reflect. Like, I just won another national championship. Like, obviously you're aiming for a third, but like, have you been able to sit back and be like, look at the basketballs on my seat behind me. Like, I really did that.
Yeah, I know, they are right there. You know, it's like hard to actually fathom, because like losing is a part of our job. You know, I mean, it's just like, you're in athletics, not for perfection. I think for like growth and how it pushes us and like our resiliency and like the adrenaline you get from competition and really tough moments and then like overcoming those tough moments. So where we are right now, I think, is a bit unnatural. And I don't know a blueprint for like how you even, you know, process that. And you're heading into season three and everybody kind of wants to talk about a streak, but I really don't think of it like that, because it really is not why I don't coach to play a win-loss scoreboard. In fact, I thought last year, I was like, okay, if somebody knocks us off, like that wouldn't be, as long as it's not the NCAA tournament, like that wouldn't be the worst thing to kind of get like a reset and reignite our energy levels or get sharper with certain things. So it's kind of an unnatural position, I think, that we're in. And I was able to really enjoy the 2024 championship the most when I was scouting in 2025 last year. And I would watch, you know, okay, we're playing WashU. I'm going to watch last year's game against WashU, what they did. And then I'm watching that 2024 team and I was like, wow, we were really, really good, right? But throughout all of 2024, every game film I watched, I was watching through the lens of critique as a coach. Like, what would take us out? Where are weaknesses? Like, why aren't we setting better screens? I mean, the same stuff that every other coach is talking about, but we were obviously winning. But that doesn't change how you're looking at your team and critiquing your team. So I actually told our staff recently, I said, I'm really looking forward to our repeat opponents to watch the 2025, you know, team play without that lens of critique, because it's very different to be able to watch your team play and that's not your team anymore. So you're not worried about what your point guard may have seen or not seen in any given moment. And so I'm kind of looking forward to that, but I'm not like rewatch every game all summer. You know, to me, it was like watching NBA and WNBA basketball and kind of seeing what new stuff I could pull and kind of utilize for this year's team. I will say I watched the national championship game was so fluid last year. And in 2024, it was so ugly. And so on our bus ride home, I watched the national championship game over like twice last year, because it was one of the best basketball games I've ever been a part of in my life. And I really, like I said, I really enjoyed that. It was really kind of the peak of that team. They played their best game on the biggest stage on the biggest day. And so now, you know, with this team, we're very different. And, you know, I think it'll be a long time before I reflect in a way that's like, wow, we really did that. You know, we have a ring ceremony game on one of our first games of the season. And so I'm sure that'll be emotional, just having the seniors who graduated come back and, you know, see them on the court without them being in a uniform. But that'll be, that'll be about, you know, the most emotion probably that I've had since we won it.
Hey, KJ, let me know if you go to that ring ceremony game. I'll definitely have to slide. That'll be a special moment for sure. I wanted to circle back real quick on the recruiting aspect of your program, because it's something that I'm so interested in just from the outside perspective. So both the men's and women's programs at NYU bring in a wealth of Division I talent every year into the team. And you talked about how you're able to do that because of the academic brand that NYU has. Yeah. So just talk about really what you look for in those scholarship players. And was this something that when you were a prospective coach looking at NYU, okay, this is something that I can accomplish. I can bring in D1 athletes to the program. It's something I'm interested in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think in terms of looking at this job, that was pre-transfer portal. So I don't think that was really a part of any type of blueprint. Although I would say, even just my own experience as a recruited student athlete, you know, our players in the UAA are across the board getting Division I looks in the recruiting process, whether those are offers, whether, you know, those are Ivy League opportunities that aren't scholarships. So then people start comparing, okay, non-scholarship to non-scholarship, you know. So I was very well aware that the draw in terms of undergraduate recruiting was Division I talent, you know, and that you could really go after that. And like I said, that was a lot of the players that I played against, you know, even in the league, especially at WashU, were, you know, they had a couple transfers even back then that made a huge difference for them. So, you know, obviously the portal and the new world of when we had the extra COVID year, like a lot of that stuff has really impacted, you know, who you see on Division III rosters, especially those of us that have a plethora of grad programs. And, you know, people want to come to the city for the city, and they might be getting, you know, a business, you know, grad degree, and they're interning on Wall Street, which is a 15-minute, you know, train ride. So those opportunities, I think, align really well with the competitive excellence that our athletic programs recruit for, because it's kind of like the people are just wired the same, whether they're in their internship, you know, whether they're in their classes, whether they're on the court or on the playing field. So that part of it really spoke to me in terms of knowing that I could recruit really highly competitive student athletes and probably be, you know, specific enough in that recruiting to recruit people I really wanted to be around every day, which has made it really, really fun and enjoyable and, you know, vastly different, I think, in terms of, you know, different coaching opportunities that are out there.
Yeah, when you think about like NYU, going to NYU and how it might be different from going to a Division I school is really not that far off. Like if you say, okay, you get to fly to every game, some mm-hmm. Division I's don't even get to do that. And then like we talked about the Paulson Center, like you have a Division I facility, or I mentioned the flying, but like just everything that NYU has to offer, it's basically, it's not a Division I school, but it's ran like one, and you would feel like you're a Division I player. And you have the opportunity to earn NIL, not through the school, but like we were talking to Hampton Sanders last year, and he was saying like, yeah, I have this deal, I have this deal, just because like I am an NYU student that has a lot of like push in these deals. So I understand what you're saying 100%. I want to skip ahead into like the basketball aspect of it. I'm curious about your offense, because you guys have like really high rankings every year and like field goal percentage. Obviously the offense translates to why you guys have such huge scoring margins. Like I think it was 37 points last year, which is OD. But just you mentioned how you're watching NBA or WNBA. So what's your offense? Who are you looking at? Like talk about how you build those year to year.
Yeah, I mean, we've really switched gears to a transition style offense. Although I will tell you that the biggest thing for me here is when we do pull some of these elite, like you just know in the recruiting process, okay, this kid's going to be like a difference maker at our level, because, you know, whether it's size, speed, will, skill, they don't, you know, a lot of players don't exist across the board at our level. So most of the time I'm trying to build our offense and defense around those cornerstones, you know? And so in 2024, our offense looked completely different than 2025. And although our numbers were the same, like we led the country in assist to turnover ratio both years. But in 2024, we had, you know, really strong back to the basket post players. So we ran honestly more of a traditional four out, one in, like diving the opposite slot, a lot of, you know, action once the ball went into the post and just kind of letting our big girl go to work. And, you know, then last year she graduated. And so I opened the floor up a lot more, played out of a pinch post offense. And, you know, again, we just had really dynamic athletes that we, you know, I try to teach a lot about how to play the game in terms of like cutting off the ball and, you know, making the right reads and not having everything be like a stagnant, like A to B to C to D. And so, you know, early that's a lot harder and it might not look quite as fluid. And then, you know, by second semester last year, the combo of our transition offense, which is, you know, a rim runner and a trail, and we're just getting right into offense as quickly as we can. We try to get across half court in 3 seconds. We try to be in an offense in 6 seconds. And, you know, our coaches will stand on the sidelines at practice and we're counting down to make sure pace is reiterated like all the time. And so I think it was pace last year that really kind of set us apart, because we also full court pressed almost the entire game, you know, honestly, just depending on the score and, you know, kind of what we were trying to work on that week. But that the defense really led our offense in terms of being able to turn teams over. We were probably in transition at least 70% of the game. And that makes a really big difference in terms of what looks you're getting, you know, versus, you know, trying to specifically get a shot for a singular player. And then I think the last part is with our recruiting and the type of players we have, it was an equal opportunity offense. And I do think that's not seen as much anymore, including the NBA and WNBA. I mean, you have your star players, and we certainly had our star players, but like our All-American averaged 14 points a game, and we were like 14, 13, 12, 11, 10 in our starting lineup. And then even had a bench player averaging like 9.9. So if you can have 6 players, that one coach described us as whack-a-mole, like you just hope you kind of knock out the right player for them. And I kind of thought, yeah, that's kind of how it felt to coach that team. So I think having a floor balance of players that can score, where teams can't just like sit in the paint and say, you know, we're just not going to guard that player when they're on the perimeter. So we would take that player and go post them up, even if they were a guard, just so that they had to actually be guarded. So just trying to manipulate ways that people guard and how we can read the game and understand the game is really a kind of our starting point every year.
It's kind of interesting, like watching how the game changes on a year-to-year basis, both at the NBA and college levels, because I feel like for example, right, the Pacers last year, they had a really good team that was, you know, they had like one through eight players that were coming in scoring like 10 plus a game, let's say a night. And now, like, I feel like you're seeing more teams being like, okay, we need to have that similar depth to our team, at least in the NBA. They want to have similar depth to the Pacers, where they could play a number of different guys who can share the ball and all score, you know, similarly and all score similar amount of points. So it's interesting to see the game, you know, change on a year-to-year basis.
Yeah. And I mean, the Pacers, right, their transition game was elite. And even for NBA standards, where there's obviously transition, but to see a team just kind of outrun another team in like the NBA finals, I mean, that side of things was really amazing, in my opinion. And, you know, our staff has actually watched a lot of the Pacers, even just trying to pull some of their spacing and things like that. But you're right. And a lot of that is having a depth of freshness, you know, so that you can insert without, you know, having such a, you know, decrease in plus minus.
It, like Ruta mentioned the Pacers, but the Fever are also like that. Like their pace is crazy. And then even you saw when Caitlin Clark went down, they had 7, 8, 9 off the bench that were able to just come in and compete, like battle to game set 7 with the Aces. So exactly. For sure. About the pace, like you mentioned, or every coach in the offseason says, like, yeah, I want to play fast this year. They tell their guys or their girls, we want to play fast. And then it's like, what are you actually doing to, like, get your team to play fast, because if you're not in practice counting 1, 2, 3, we need, then obviously they're not going to play fast in the game. So like, you can see why your teams are really good at offense. This is going to, I'll talk about the Team USA. We don't have to talk too much about it, but I am kind of curious about your experience with it. So you were the coach for the U17 team and you guys won gold. Congrats to you. That's big. Thank you. I'm just curious if you could walk us through, like, one, how the opportunity came to you, and then like maybe 2-3 moments that you will always stick out from your experience coaching Team USA.
Yeah, I was a substitution in that coaching decision. Somebody had a health related incident, so they couldn't return. You know, so the USA basketball stints when you're doing the youth programming is 2 years. You'll start with a 16U team, and then you know you continue on with the 17U team. So someone else was the 16U coach, and then I came in to coach a 17U team. I can't even recall. I was sitting at my desk, and I got a phone call from like a random phone number, and they were like, "Hey, are you interested? This is so and so from USA Basketball. Are you interested?" And I actually kind of thought it was a prank call. Like, what? I think I had gotten an email before, like, "Hey, I'm going to be calling you if you're interested." It just came out of like left field. And I obviously said yes. I mean, really, without, I had to check with my family and make sure that it was doable, but really obviously without hesitation to be able to be a part of that organization. And so, I mean, the things that stick out, I think first and foremost, I think a lot of people would think that there's just an incredible amount of ego, you know, when you're coaching the best players in the country, you know, and there's a roster and there's obviously only 5 players can start. And you have players that have been the best of the best since they began playing. But they're really the players' understanding of USA basketball was, and what that meant was just unbelievable to be around. You know, they really push aside that level of ego. And, you know, you still have to have, I think, ego to go out and know that you are as a group USA Basketball. But the individual agendas were just not existent. And that was really, really pleasant, you know, to be able to get after it with a group and see them so excited on the world stage and really some really tough competition. I mean, the world has gotten so much better on the women's basketball side. And a lot of those teams are playing together like year round. And we're practicing, you know, we have a mini camp and we have this and we have that. And it's just a lot less time to kind of get your group ready for the fact that, okay, Japan's going to run a 5 out, and then you're going to have to play France and they're going to press, and then you're going to have to play this 6'5" post. So your team also has to be built to sustain all the different ways that the game can be played in different countries. So it was just a really phenomenal growth experience for me as a coach. And obviously ridiculously rewarding to represent USA across your chest. And that's felt from, you know, the coaches to the managers, to the, you know, players wearing the jersey. And when you ask about, you know, just moments, I mean, I can't remember the documentary, if it was like Jordan's, I think it came out, not a 30 for 30, but like Jordan's, like Netflix.
The Last Dance.
Yeah. And they show like the USA basketball games, like pick, you know, where they were just going at it. And so, you know, I would just show up at practice and I'm like, this court looks really familiar. It's like, oh yeah, this was from Jordan playing, you know? So that like nostalgia and just basketball tradition in terms of, you know, USA on the national stage was such a highlight in my coaching career for sure. And then the other one would be when we won gold, my mom was there, my wife was there, just turning around in the stands and like seeing them, and they had come all the way down to Mexico for the World Cup. And so that was like a really cool moment that I got to actually share that with my family.
That story is super dope, coach. And, you know, I think you kind of touched on it, but not a lot of Division III coaches, if any, will really get that type of opportunity that you had, and you did something great with it. One gold, like, that's an amazing feat. And you've accomplished so much in your career, coaching career already, 2 national championships as a coach, and, you know, gold I'm just wondering, what drives you now? What's next to accomplish? What does the future look like for Coach Barber? It's something I'm interested in.
I think I have to go on a retreat to really think about that. But I will say that I just feel so grateful. I've had a lot of not great years, and I think on everybody's coaching journey, you really have ups and downs. And, I had years where we couldn't find a win if it was, I've had those years. And so, being at Temple, and I alluded to the UConn years, but also, Temple then is not what Temple is now. And, even where it is positioned on the collegiate landscape. So I think the side of things that haven't gone as I wanted them to go, or maybe didn't go as planned, has allowed me a really high level of gratitude for where I am now, and my peace and happiness of where I am now. And my family as well, just being able to share, my career with my family really means a lot. So that's I think actually being happy where I am has kind of brought other things to my plate and these amazing opportunities to my plate, as opposed to, okay, we had one really great year, I'm out. I'm going to go take one of these D1 offers and, try to rebuild it somewhere else. I have so much pride in, having been an NYU alum and really being a part of this program and what we've built here, that I think I'm going to enjoy it for sure right now. But not, obviously the work isn't over. It's kind of a new chapter with this new team to see what we can do. And then also just the state of women's basketball right now. It's fun to be a part in New York City, to be a part of what's going on and the growth and the moment and kind of all eyes on the sport, which is really, really fun as well. So, I was at the Nets game last night, and I have Liberty season tickets.
I was at the Nets game too last night.
They had a nice comeback.
It was a pretty good game. When Trey got hurt, I feel like the Hawks, the air just got taken out of the stadium. It was a weird game after that, but it was still competitive. MPJ looked good last night.
MPJ did look good. I'm interested to see the strategy for drafting down the road, because there's some prospects that would be nice to see in a Nets uniform. But yeah, I was saying someone has to win. The Nets are 0-4 and the Hawks are 1-3. So.
No, for sure. And I appreciate your answer. Just talking about gratitude is a really, I feel like, undervalued thing to have sometimes. A lot of people sometimes are not able to appreciate, where they're at, no matter where that may be, and just being appreciative for what you have in front of you. So I really appreciate you saying that, Coach, but it's been a great episode with you. Usually we have rapid fire and starting five. KJ runs starting five. I run rapid fire. Are you ready for rapid fire, Coach?
I guess. Yeah, I didn't know this. So it's going to be fun.
All right, let's do it. So rapid fire, the first question I got for you: what is your favorite UAA away trip?
Probably Emory, because it's usually a little bit warmer.
In Atlanta, right?
Yep, down in Atlanta. Yeah.
Yep. Second rapid fire question. So you're in New York City right now. And, I was born in New York City, lived there for about 11 years. And, I know New York City has a lot of great food. So I got to ask, your number one go-to spot in New York City? You might put me or KJ on with this answer too.
Okay. So I'm going to go with my local spot, because I got to, rep NYU's campus. But we have a spot, Tre Giovanni. And on Google Maps, it's a 3, but it's TRE. And just a local staple Italian, really great people, excellent salmon. Yeah, it's my number one.
And then last rapid fire question. I know that every game pretty much kind of last year was you guys beat them usually by a pretty big margin. But was there a game last year, during the game, after, whatever it may be, where you were wow, that was a tough win, or wow, they almost got us there? Was there anything close to that? I'm interested.
See, I feel egotistical saying, like know that there really weren't many teams that like almost got us, but we had to play at Gettysburg because our men were hosting the Sweet 16 Elite Eight rounds. And just that weekend of basketball, the coaching was outstanding. They kind of showed us a couple different looks that we hadn't seen. And I remember thinking after the game, man, I'm glad like no one saw this earlier, because it probably would have affected strategy down the road. And you had to have certain players to do it, right? So you don't always have the players to implement the same strategy as somebody else. But the Geneseo coaching staff just did a phenomenal job. And then we had to play the host, you know, Gettysburg at Gettysburg to go on to the Final Four. And so both of those were highlights for sure.
We actually talked to the Geneseo women's head coach. So,
oh, for real? Yeah.
Yeah, she's a good coach. She's got interesting philosophies, building that program up to like not a national contender, but definitely like a good team year to year.
Yeah, they were phenomenal. Some old school basketball in there too, like just old school high low game, right? That you don't necessarily see. So,
but we're gonna end this episode with Starting Five edition. So, if you're a coach, assemble a lineup, point guard through center. Who's your lineup gonna be? And this edition is gonna be the best UAA players throughout your coaching career. So, I know that NYU players have dominated, but I'm gonna say you can only pick a maximum of two of them. The rest have to be outside. And just tell me where they played at.
Well, all right, I'll start with my own that's hard. That's like choosing. We've had a lot of All-Americans in my time, so that's
hard.
Difficult. I'll go with our two. I'll go with our players that were part of both the national championships because there's a reason we won two with them. So Natalie Bruns would be our like stretch four, really, if I could. She played the five for us last year, but I'd have her as our stretch four. And then Belle Pelleckia, just nasty defender. So she doesn't have to play point, but she could. And then let me think. There was a post player. I think it was Rachel, but her last name was Homily. My first year back in the league, she played for WashU post player. So she would be our five. She played our style. She was a rim runner, sealed inside, just nasty competitor. So she'd be my five. And then, it's hard to not pick my own players.
I'll give you one more. And then the other one has to be a UAA competitor.
Oh, man. If I had to pick one more, I'd probably go with a player on our roster now, Caroline Pepper, because she's just like lights out shooter. So, because you got to think, like, if you have a team that's going to play zone, you have to be ready. You have to have a zone buster. So she's our zone buster for sure. And then there's a player for Emory. So I would just go big. There's a player for Emory. Her last name is Oldshoe. Her sister actually played at NYU, and then the other sister played at Emory. She was in my early tenure here as well, but a nasty out. So that's my five. We could probably beat a lot of D1s. That's a big lineup. That's an elite lineup.
That sounds like a good lineup. Yeah. But that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We appreciate you getting on the show. And since I'm at NYU, I'm definitely going to catch a few games. I got Rudo, pull up to the ring ceremony, bro.
We're going to figure something out, KJ. We're going to figure something out.
November 22nd. Well, let's see you here.
All right, let's do it. Well,
That might work.
All right, that's going to do it for our conversation with Coach Barber. Great convo. And one thing, like I said in the intro, you can't really tell if she's a great coach, but the NYU style is like pretty demoralizing for teams, and the scores show for itself why it's demoralizing. Like you go to NYU and then you lose by 60. That hurts in itself. But also like they're playing so fast and you score a basket and then boom, right there on a fast break getting a layup. You're like, damn, I just scored. And one thing I saw against Jersey City, again, no disrespect, but they were getting like Jersey City didn't have a big roster. It had like 8 to 10 players or whatever. And a girl was getting trapped in the corner and the other girl was just standing in the opposite corner. And their coach is like, basically, what are you doing? Like, go help her out. And she walked to the huddle and I saw her. She was like, I can't breathe. And I was like, damn, like that's really how it'd be, especially for some of like a smaller school or something. It's kind of hard for these schools to compete with NYU because they got 15 girls that are all elite and can just get through that press and keep going and keep going and keep going. Some of these teams really can't. And it's also like some historic being at NYU. Before you got to the the New Paltz game, I saw one of the like alumni for New Paltz. She was walking to their fans and she like touched the floor and she's like, guys, I just touched the floor. And she was obviously like playing around a little bit, but it's still like the principle of it is like it's really some legendary shit if you have thoughts about it.
Yeah, I mean, when you go, like you said, to the NYU Athletic Center, you go to the court, like you could feel the aura of the gym and the program. And that New Paltz game, I mean, it was a crazy game. And they were by the time I got there, the game was over. You know what I'm saying? And the fans were still rowdy talking about the refs changed the game when the refs maybe called like three fouls while I was there, bro. It ain't the refs' fault. Believe that. But yeah, they just play hard, bro. They play fast. And you're right, the style they play is dope. And I love the way that Coach Barber coaches that team. But it was definitely, it's interesting just to see how she built that team. Like the NYU, you know, maybe the men's team has like a different approach to it because I feel like they have a lot of like Division I, you know, former walk-ons that were on the team that are on the team now that, you know, last year played Division I basketball. And I didn't really see a lot of that from NYU's roster. I feel like they have a lot of new players this year, but the result is still the same. And what can you attest that to? Good coaching at the end of the day, I feel like. But yeah, definitely a great episode with Coach Barber, bro.
Yeah. And last thing, shout out to Caroline Pepper. She just got her 1K. She's OD tough. No conscious at all from the 3-point line. I saw in one of the games she missed like her first six maybe and still like just getting them up. She had 41 the other day on 23 threes she took in a game. So she's elite and this team is elite. I personally can't see them losing a game this year, but D3 is lit, so you never know. But I'm looking forward to see how far this streak can go. Make sure you follow us at Not Even D2. Subscribe. We appreciate all the support. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.